Hello, everyone, and welcome to this special live edition of Change Starts Here Research Conversations. I'm Jennifer Chevalier, and I'm joined tonight by my friend and colleague, Kim Yaris. Hey, Kim.
Hey, Jen.
So tonight, we're diving into a topic that I'm personally really passionate about, the impact of words. Before we get too far into the conversation, I want to let you know that we'll be opening up the floor for questions at the end. So if something comes to mind as we're talking, feel free to drop your question in the comments on whichever social media platform you're streaming, and our event moderator will monitor the chats and we'll do our best to answer as many questions as we can before we wrap up tonight.
I am really looking forward to the questions that come up around this topic because, like Jen, I too am very passionate about this topic. And true story, as I was preparing for this conversation, I had an experience that spoke directly into this topic.
Oh, really? What happened?
So I was on a bike ride in my neighborhood and I was coming around the bend and I saw a woman walking on the sidewalk and then an instant she just tripped and fell.
No.
I know. So I immediately rode toward her to check if she was okay. And long story short, she scraped her knee and hand bit. Physically, she was fine. However, she kept saying things like, "I'm so clumsy. I'm so careless."
Oh, gosh, Kim, that is such a common response when someone falls. I've said things like that myself. We blame ourselves instead of focusing on whether or not we are actually okay or commenting on what caused us to fall in the first place. And just like the woman in your story, we start labeling ourselves in such a negative way.
That's exactly what I was thinking. But here's the weird thing. At right around the same time that I saw this happen, I saw basically the same thing happen to a little girl, maybe 4 years old. She took a big old spill. And when she did, I thought for sure she was hurt. She was going to start crying. But she didn't. She popped back up, dusted herself off, and said, "Oops, I fell," like it was no big deal. Then she went right back to playing.
Well, it sure is a contrast in their responses. It's amazing how kids can just shake things off so easily. They don't overthink things and they are just able to move on. I think somewhere along the line, we lose that ability, don't we?
Oh my gosh, you saying this is reminding me of one of my favorite quotes. By Marilyn Yeager Adams. Words are not words. They are the nexus, the interface between communication and thought.
Wow. So the connection between communication and thought, that illustrates that the words that we use aren't just surface level. They're more deeply connected to how we think and how we see the world. It's like our language creates the lens through which we experience life. So if our self-talk shifts to something overly critical, that lens becomes cloudy and negative.
Exactly, exactly. So I just want to share with you. So it's like this. The words we use create our feelings. So words lead to feelings, lead to beliefs, which come back to the words that we use. So it's all like interconnected. It's this feedback loop that can either build us up or tear us down, depending on the language that we're using.
Oh, that's awesome. So let's play that out a little bit. The woman walking in your neighborhood used the word clumsy, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so now I'm just speculating here. I'm putting myself in her shoes, but I could argue that the feelings connected to this word could be embarrassed and ashamed, because that's probably how I would feel too.
And how I would feel too.
Going further, this leads to her belief that she is flawed in some way, that being clumsy is just like an unfortunate part of who she is. And then the next time she stumbles or makes a mistake, she's likely to say it again, "I'm so clumsy," reinforcing that belief even further. So it's like a cycle that can become automatic, and over time, it shapes not just how she sees herself, but also how she approaches challenges and setbacks.
Exactly. But it works in the opposite direction too. Like Let's imagine her now reacting in the same way as our 4-year-old friend, saying something like, oops, I tripped, no big deal. Now the feeling might be more neutral or even self-forgiving. And the belief that forms is less about who she is and more about what just happened in that moment. It's the difference between seeing a stumble as a defining trait versus a temporary event.
This example is really aligning to research findings where the impact of language is studied. Researchers have found that positive language has the power to uplift, while negative language can lead to distress.
Exactly right. Negative self-talk doesn't just affect our emotions. It can actually impair our performance and well-being. It can lead to increased anxiety, lower self-esteem, even worse outcomes like underperformance in those high-pressure moments. Whereas positive language can have the exact opposite effect. It works like a reset button for our mindset, helping us approach our challenges with confidence instead of doubt. And the beauty of this is that it applies everywhere. How we talk to ourselves, how we talk to our students, how we talk to our colleagues, even how we talk to our own kids.
Wow, the research on this is so compelling. I mean, words are really powerful, whether we're talking about the words we use with ourselves or with others. And I think this is a perfect segue into how this plays out in our schools. Language can impact both how students learn and how teachers teach.
Oh, I can speak to that. I remember this time when I was a middle school English teacher teaching my students the difference between their T-H-E-Y apostrophe R-E, and their T-H-E-I-R. And so one of my students said, I'm never going to get this.
Oh, gosh, that's such a classic example, Kim. And I'm sure there are some people that are having like some PTSD from trying to figure out those three words and how to spell them for each case. But your student really, it sounds like, was talking in absolutes. And if we think back to the cycle you described earlier, those words are a reflection of her feelings, frustration, and maybe even a fear of failing. Over time, those feelings can translate into a negative belief about herself as a learner. I also saw this often when I was teaching, and I'm sure many of our listeners can relate to seeing it in their own students. It just makes me wonder what educators can do to help when they hear students using absolute language like that.
I think the first step, as you mentioned, is to notice when students are using absolute language. You know, so when you hear words like never or always, you know, that's when the radar should be going off. So kids will say things like, I'm never going to understand this, or I always get this wrong. So once we've noticed it, the next step is to help them reframe those statements by adding one simple but immensely powerful word, yet.
The power of yet. So what would that sound like in practice?
All right. So take a statement like, I'm never going to get this. If we were reframing it for a student, we might say, you mean you don't understand this yet? That one word opens the door to possibility and growth. So like, let's try another one. If you hear a student say, I always get this wrong, how could you reframe that for them using the word yet?
All right. Well, first I would have to be tuned in enough to recognize that the student is using absolute language. And so I heard always. And then I might say something like, you mean you haven't gotten this right yet?
Exactly. And here's the powerful part. When you do this, you'll often see something shift in students. A lot of times, they'll pause and then say something like, well, I haven't gotten them all wrong. Almost like they're revising their beliefs right in front of you.
It's incredible how such a small shift in language can create such a big difference in how students see themselves and their abilities. I love that just by introducing the word yet, we're not just reframing the moment, we're planting the seed for a growth mindset that they can carry with them well beyond the classroom. And the best part is how easy it is to incorporate this practice. It doesn't require a whole new lesson plan or big strategy, just a little awareness and intentionality in how we respond. I imagine this could be a real game changer, not just for teachers, but for anyone interacting with kids, or even adults for that matter.
I agree. And here's a really beautiful thing. When we do this for others, we're not just helping them in that moment. We're modeling habits of thought that can eventually override those patterns of negative self-talk that get so deeply ingrained in our brains. It's like we're holding up a mirror for them, reflecting back when those limiting beliefs show up and showing them there's another way to think about themselves and their abilities. And this doesn't just happen with students. It happens with colleagues, friends, family. When we're intentional about reframing language and focusing on strength, we create a ripple effect. It becomes a shared habit of thought that builds up the people around us. Over time, that kind of culture can transform a classroom, a school, or even a whole community. You got to think big.
That's such an important point, Kim. And it reminds me of something I've noticed, how the language we use, whether positive or negative, often sets the tone for the people around us. Mm-hmm. And while strengths-based language can be empowering, the flip side is that deficit-based language can have the exact opposite effect. It can reinforce feelings of inadequacy or even create barriers to growth.
Interesting insight. Can you say more about that?
Sure. Well, deficit-based language often sneaks in without us even realizing it. During parent-teacher conferences, I have heard parents say in front of their children, "My child just isn't good at math. I never was either." These remarks might seem benign, offhanded comments, but let's think about the potential impact of language like this.
Okay. Challenge accepted. So if I'm a student whose parent has said that, what I think I'd hear is that my mom or dad doesn't believe in me. Mm-hmm. And if I'm already struggling with math, chances are my self-concept as a math student is pretty shaky. And so now my mom or dad has just reinforced this negative belief that I have about myself. And that's powerful, but not in a good way.
Exactly, Kim. And so now let's take it a step further. What happens if the teacher followed up with, "Well, if you were paying attention in class more, you'd do better in math"?
Well, now it's not just my math skills I'm doubting, right? I'm questioning whether I'm even a good student. I'm sitting there asking myself, am I not paying close enough attention? Did I miss something because I'm not capable of focusing? It becomes like this spiral of self-doubt where every comment chips away at my confidence
a little bit more.
That right there. What starts as a single phrase can just snowball into a bigger narrative that students create about themselves. I'm bad at math, or worse, I'm just not a good student. And when students internalize those beliefs, it doesn't just affect how they approach one subject or one lesson. It can impact how they see themselves overall as learners.
Yes. And the heartbreaking part is that these beliefs, once formed, can be awfully hard to undo. You know, so being mindful of language is so crucial. When we replace those deficit-based comments with strength-based alternatives, we can interrupt that spiral and help students start building a more positive self-concept.
Absolutely. You know, just being intentional with our words really can make all the difference. And what's great is that shifting from deficit-based to strengths-based language doesn't have to be complicated. It's often about small but powerful changes in how we phrase things. So, for example, instead of saying something like, "You're not good at math," we could say, "This is challenging right now, but I can see you're working hard to figure it out."
This hits me completely differently as a student. What I hear now is that you believe in me. I hear that this problem is temporary. I hear that my effort can impact the outcome.
Yes, and that's the magic of strength-based language. It communicates belief in a student's potential while reinforcing that effort and persistence matter. It's no longer about labeling the student based on abilities. It's about focusing on the student's progress and the process of learning. And here's the really interesting thing. When students hear this kind of language consistently, it starts to reshape how they talk to themselves. They begin to internalize those messages of possibility and growth. So instead of thinking, I'm just not good at this, they might start to say, I'm not there yet, but I'll get there if I keep trying. That shift is so powerful.
There's that word yet again. I love how it keeps coming up because it's such a simple word, but it carries so much power. This reminds me of our recent conversation about developing student efficacy and agency. Strength-based language plays such a huge role in shaping students' belief about what they're capable of. When we use language that focuses on growth and possibility, it helps students believe that can succeed, which inspires them to take action. And that belief, combined with action, is what drives their overall success.
At the beginning of this conversation, you mentioned a quote that you loved, and now one that I love is coming to mind. It's by Yehuda Berg, who said, "Words are singularly the most powerful force available to humanity. Words have energy and power with the ability to help, to heal, to hurt, to harm, to humiliate, and to humble." Words aren't just about communication. They carry energy and intention that can shape how we see ourselves and the world around us. When we're mindful of the words we choose, we're tapping into that power to help and heal rather than hurt and harm. And in a classroom, that means we have this incredible opportunity to use our words to build students up, to encourage them, and to inspire them to believe in their own potential.
I love your choice of words there, Jennifer. Opportunity, indeed. It's like strengths-based language acts as sort of a toolbox, not just for learning content, but for building resilience and confidence that students can carry with them so far beyond the classroom. Our language truly has a ripple effect, and that is why we believe that the more we practice it, the more we increase the potential and power of it.
And that's why we've developed a staff booster for educators to take back to your school. Someone from our production team is dropping the link to it in the chat now.
Yes, and to what you've said, I want to add that we designed the staff booster. We wanted to help create something that would help you and your colleagues reflect on your language and make small but powerful shifts towards strengths-based communication.
And honestly, it's relevant to anyone, whether you're in education or not. We all are speaking to people and saying things to ourselves. So I would encourage all of our audience members to check it out. This feels like a great time to open up the conversation to questions from the audience.
Okay, let's see what we got here. All right, so one question that I'm seeing come through here. How can we motivate students to use strengths-based language? Jen, would you mind if I talk just a little bit about that?
Oh, go right ahead.
Okay, so I think that this is a great example of how it just comes down to modeling. So a few years ago, I was working in a classroom with a teacher on this very, very thing, you know, just using more strengths-based language. And I just remember getting this very excited email from her telling me the story about how when she started using it, what happened was she started hearing her students saying the same words that she had been using with them. So it just, you know, there's this quote that says, we get our writers' voices from the places we live as readers. And I think voice comes from the places that we live, period. And so when we hear a lot of the strengths-based language, students just start tuning into it and they just They hear it and they make it their own.
That's a great response. I see another question coming in from social asking about if this whole mindset and the power of yet is just really geared toward elementary students or if it's relatable for students in middle and high school. I wonder what you have to say about that, Kim.
I think yet is a mindset, right? And so, yes, it's wonderful if we can start at the elementary school and, you know, just make that part of their everyday lexicon. But I don't think that it's ever too late to start using that word, right? You know, like, because it's such a mindset, yet in such a simple shift, I think it's wholly appropriate to use in middle and high school. What do you think?
I do too, just because as an adult, I still have to work on these things. Like if I forget to do something, I just automatically in my mind say, oh, I'm such an idiot. Instead of saying like, oh, I had like a system failure here. You know, I need to work on my systems. They're not fine tuned yet, you know, something like that. So I think it's relatable for anyone at any age.
All right. So there's another question coming through here. So would you classify this as a total shift in language? And if so, how long do you think the shift takes? What do you think, Jen?
I don't think it's a total shift in language. I think there are strategic ways that we can just reframe things. And I think that it's something that builds over time. It's more of a gradual process where like we start catching ourselves of using those absolutes or saying negative things to ourselves. And so like that first step of just recognizing it and then starting to flip the script of what we're saying to others or to ourselves. And I think it just builds over time and, you know, probably it gets strong for a while. And then we have moments where it kind of falls away and then we're like, oh, yes, I'm doing it again. And we have to work on it again. So I think it's kind of just a slow, gradual improvement over time using just some key shifts in our messaging. What do you think?
Yeah. So one of the things that I hear you, if I were to give it a name, it requires intentionality. Right. So if you're going to start shifting your language, it starts like with what we were talking about before about noticing, you know, where you need a shift, just like noticing you're noticing students using absolutes. We're noticing places where we're using strengths-based language or we're using deficits-based language. And then we just start to make these small reframes. And the more we do that, the more aware we become of it. You know, there's something called the reticular activating system. Like when you focus on something, you start to see it. Like if you say, I'm going to buy a red car, that's all you start to notice are red cars. And that's what's happening here. We're going to activate that system, start to notice it by bringing our attention to it. We can make those small shifts. And I think that whenever we become intentional about anything, it flows quickly as to speak to the question about how long will it take? So it becomes, you know, it follows quickly thereafter, I would say.
Awesome. Not seeing any other questions, are you?
Let's see. One more. How would you respond to students that are still resistant despite implementing the strategies that we have shared?
I think we have to drill down into that to understand why. Like, is it that they're so deeply ingrained in that negative talk and that negative view? Or is there something else going on? Is it just like, you know, rebelling in their own little way? Like, I'm not doing that, you know, that kind of thing. So I think it depends. And we would really have to investigate that deeper, like, you know, seeking first to understand, then to be understood. So we would have to lean into that. What do you think, Kim?
You know, I think our voice of criticism is really persistent, right? It almost becomes easier to believe negative things about ourselves than positive things. And so I oftentimes wonder if resistance is us kind of doubling down you know, insisting the bad things about us are true and the good things about us are not. You know, it's just, you know, these principles of psychology. So I would say, I think that you're onto something when you say drill down, right? Because it's never what you think it is. And beneath that resistance are things that improving culture and within a classroom, you know, communicating belief, you know, regularly communicating that we believe in you, that there is, you know, this paradigm of potential and that we believe in you, really can bolster how one's own self-concept about themselves.
You got me thinking as you were talking, you know, kids come from all kinds of different backgrounds and different situations at home. And, you know, some parents have an awareness about the power of their language and use it for good. And then, you know, some kids are just subject to constant negative messaging at home. You know, you're no good. You're never going to amount to something. And so I think for some students who really have that background, it can be much more difficult to help them make that shift. And, you know, maybe some outside resources, a school counselor, some other people may need to be involved to help support when it's that kind of background.
Yeah. Well, Jim, what do you think? This has been such an important and meaningful conversation. I am so grateful for the chance to reflect on the power of words and how they shape our feelings, beliefs, and actions. Conversations like this remind me just how much impact we can have where we're intentional about the language that we use.
Agreed. To our audience, thank you so much for joining us tonight. If you enjoyed this conversation, we'd love for you to hang with us in our regularly scheduled podcast episodes. The podcast is called Change Starts Here. Be sure to like, subscribe, and follow so you'll be notified about new episodes and upcoming topics. We look forward to connecting with you again soon.
Thanks, everybody, for joining us tonight.